This is the Total Football Podcast. I am Declan Hart.
And I'm Andrew Conway.
Let's get on with the show.
This fella Ronaldo is a cod.
Arsene Wenger's been in Japan for a year. They don't know anything about English football.
I have nothing to say. I'm so sorry, I have nothing to say.
It's the history of the Tottenham.
But this action is really incredible.
You don't know the answer to that question, then I think you are an ostrich.
Today's big topic of discussion will come as no surprise to any of you, dear listener, but before we dig in, let's congratulate Jurgen Klopp, because it's not every day a Liverpool manager gets to win 5-0 at Old Trafford.
No, it's certainly not. Has it ever happened?
Oh, there's been a lot of Liverpool Man United games, so yeah. Maybe. And the two teams have fluctuated a lot in terms of the power structures of English football. So
certainly in Premier League era, there has never been a Manchester United performance quite like this. Like the big defeats they've suffered in the past to Man City, to who else did they lose badly to before?
Tottenham, Chelsea, Newcastle. If you want to go back.
You know, yeah, with the exception of with the exception of that Newcastle match back in 1997, which was as the season opener, like the second game of the season, and you know United ended up winning that league, so it didn't really matter. It's a long road, I suppose, for Manchester United to actually have suffered a defeat quite like this. It's been coming for quite a long time. Gary Neville, if anyone saw the commentary that he was given, he was eulogising Manchester United for quite a lot of the match. Like, it wasn't really analysis, it wasn't co-commentary, it was more just speaking, and his just dismay as a fan was just coming out, and his unhappiness as a fan. I think it was a day that they probably would have been fun to have Roy Keane just to hear his analysis of it, and instead we got Jermaine Defoe just looking kind of bemused, despite, you know, he was fine on speaking, but he just kind of there is a couple of moments when they cut to him when it was at halftime. Was it 4-0 at halftime, which United haven't had in the Premier League era, I don't think. I think he probably had the same face a lot of us had on. It was like, what do you even say about that?
Yeah, it was funny actually they didn't have Rookie, and I didn't even think of that, but I suppose Jamie Carragher on the other end didn't have a whole lot to say.
No,
because what else was there to really say from a Liverpool perspective? You know, they like doing this triple commentary team whenever Man United play Liverpool. I suppose I can see why with Neville and Carragher there. And yeah, in the second half, I think I saw Joe Devine of TIFO describe it as more like a podcast. Because, you know, there's people running around on a pitch, but there was no football game really happening. And, you know, I suppose after 5-0, 50 minutes in, Liverpool just kind of stopped playing. Certainly after Paul Pogba got sent off on the hour mark, they just kind of shut up shop, said let's pass it around the back for 30 minutes and almost like a training exercise. And I suppose that's the real humiliation in a lot of big defeats like this for any team, is that the opposition stop playing. You know, we saw this with the Germany 7-1. You know, we've seen it in the past loads of times. I'm sure Man United have done it themselves to other teams, but when it is your biggest rival doing it, it's extra embarrassing. So for Jurgen Klopp, it's always a bit of an awkward position when you've just hammered an opposing manager like that. A few managers were always very you know, sympathetic to Arsene Wenger whenever, you know, it happened to him a good few times. You know, so Klopp, I think, focused a bit more on himself, which I thought was the right thing to do. One of his comments was something along the lines of, you know, in 5 to 10 years' time, we'll look back on this as a historic win for the history of the football club. And, you know, I suppose that absolutely humiliating kind of defeat against the Man United side was all he was missing. As a Liverpool manager, he's done so much else. And, you know, he saw off Jose Mourinho. Has he seen off Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as well? Like, that is a really impressive record for him to leave, even beside the trophies that he's won and all the good times that he's had. So, you know, he's he's building up a nice little CV there to stake a claim as not quite the best Liverpool manager ever, but he should be in the conversation maybe after a match like that.
Certainly of the modern era, he's got a shout in there for it. I thought this Liverpool performance, especially if you consider the circumstances of the week they've had, and I know Manchester United played in the Champions League as well, but there's one thing, you know, playing anywhere away from home is tough in midweek, and then playing such an attritional game as they played during the midweek, and then come back without really, with a few of their best and starting players kind of absent or really at full pace, they just were able to take apart Manchester United with ease. Like there was moments in that first half where he had Trent Alexander-Arnold playing effectively as a left winger, like completely the opposite end of the pitch. There was moments, obviously James Milner should have had a goal, but Diogo Jota got there before him for the second goal. Liverpool just took all the chances that were presented to them, and I think you have to acclaim the players for doing that. Like they could have sat back very early on and kind of just passed the ball around and kept fairly solid, if not penetrative, domination on Manchester United, but they decided not to do that. They decided to go straight for the jugular when opportunities presented themselves. They saw basically the Red Sea part, if you will, in the middle of Old Trafford, and they were able to flow through it with all of their attacks, and obviously putting four goals in the first half was pretty impressive. It's impressive in any game, but especially in a match that in the past Liverpool have fail to show up for, or kind of you can see that they often feel the pressure in this match maybe more so than the other games they play. I remember certainly the draw in the season they went and won the league, that kind of felt as an aberration in their whole season, but that seems to be completely dismissed, and really Liverpool never really looked troubled with the exception of that disallowed Cristiano Ronaldo goal in the beginning of the second half, a player who himself probably could have been sent off in the game.
Yeah, and like the thing with Liverpool is that they didn't have to really get out of second gear to win this game. Like it was interesting that, you know, Man United actually managed to get into Liverpool's attacking third quite a lot, but whenever they did, they didn't really have a coherent idea of what to do to get the ball into the box, which is the crucial step, really. Whereas with Liverpool, they didn't get into the attacking third as often, but when they did, they were clinical, they were ruthless, every player knew where their teammates were and where they were going to be and where this ball should go and where this run should be made, and they were ruthless. And obviously Salah, was it a hat-trick from Salah? He was ruthless in front of goal himself. He got an assist too, I think, for Naby Keita's goal. And one thing that stood out to me before the game was obviously the Man United lineup came out, and I think it was the same as the Atalanta game, which obviously, you know, they were 2-0 down in that game, but came back 3-2 and they went top of the Champions League group. But it was an as-expected kind of side. But with Liverpool, you know, they're having a bit of an injury crisis in midfield at the moment, and it really showed because the midfield of, what was it, Henderson, Milner and Keita just didn't really light up, light my eyes up, and when
both,
I saw it.
Yeah. Keita and Milner both went down as well, and obviously there, Milner as well having to come off. Like it was touch and go for that Liverpool midfield in that first half, even if they were going to survive as they were. But like I thought, Liverpool what they did phenomenally in that game to kind of combat the kind of, I don't know what you say, the misjudged quality, or maybe the golfing class, or maybe the match sharpness in those positions. Like a lot, like Keita hasn't played a lot of football this season, and Milner has been in and out of the side and not often playing in midfield. And Henderson, obviously, he played very well. I think his assist yesterday is one of the assists of the season, to be quite honest. But you weren't to know that before the game started. And I think Liverpool set up with a very compact team where they kept everything very tight. And I think that welcomed United on. And even in the second half, when like Liverpool really did take the foot off the gas, they just got so compact and so tight that Man United could have all the ball in the world and they could be in Liverpool's half. But Liverpool were so tight that you can try and play a ball over the top, it's going to be caught by our goalie or be called offside. You can try and take a long shot, but our players are going to get in the way. And there was really no avenue for Manchester United to do anything in the way that they had set up on the field.
Yeah, and I think that's commendable for Klopp, and he shouldn't be forgotten because they're suffering with injury quite a lot, and they're still just playing really nice football. You know, they're getting really excellent results, like going to Atletico and winning, even, you know, if it did take a late penalty. That's not the easiest game you'll have. Maybe the hardest they will have all season physically, to go to the Wanda. Very difficult place to go. You know, they've smashed Manchester United. They're within touching distance of the league leaders. They've played all the big teams now, I think, or at the very least they've played all their preseason title challengers, and they're unbeaten in those games. So yeah, they're in a great spot, and they really are a force to be reckoned with.
Absolutely. And I think, again, we saw a little taste of it during the match with the injuries they suffered and the midfield woes that they seem to have. But if Liverpool can keep their core players, and really there's 13 or 14 of them there, if they can keep those together and keep them relatively fit for most of the season, I can't see them really being caught, because I think player like 11 versus 11, they're better than Man City.
So let's dig in then on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who may have been sacked by the time that you people are listening to this, but I suppose we'll keep abreast of the situation live and see if anything happens. There have been reports in The Guardian, Manchester Evening News, The Times, that...
everywhere, basically. Yeah. The Athletic, the
ESPN,
you know, the Zimbabwe Deliverer. You know, whatever newspaper globally you want to know, I'm sure they've had a word with somebody at the club who's been leaking information, like, until the cows come home. For God's sake, some of the stories had the and I suppose this is a good place to start, is Manchester United's actual management at a club level, and how they fare and how they're kind of behind every other club, and they kind of are a bit of a... I don't want to cause too much consternation with this, but it's very similar to the Trump administration when he was in the office, when every day there was leaks coming out of there, when something important was happening, there was so many more leaks happening, and you'd hear personal conversations that were happening, and like really in-depth information that you had no right knowing, and there was no real reason for it to get out. But that is the choice of this football club and the way they operate themselves. Like the fact that we know the managing director, is it Richard Arnold? Is that his name? We know his calendar for today being Monday, and that he cleared the calendar in order to have, you know, important, probably, crisis discussions, probably is what they'll call them once they're over, with the owner, Joel Glazer, over in Florida. So it's, if you know that, you know, stretch of information, and it's making newspapers, it's making the rounds, there's something going on.
Yeah, and I suppose we should start with the fact that they are already being linked with replacements. Antonio Conte, very early in the morning, came forward essentially as the number one target, being linked with the fact that he would be open to taking the role. It's just come out as we recorded, Zinedine Zidane would not be interested in coming, and has said that he wants to enjoy some time off, and frankly, if I was Zinedine Zidane, I would too. He's probably absolutely living it up at the moment, you know, relaxing, waiting for the France job or whatever.
Getting that FIFA money, yeah.
Exactly. So right now, they've been the two names put forward. One's denied, one's going ahead. So Antonio Conte as Manchester United manager, I suppose, is what is the discussion that we need to have, as well as maybe eulogising Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's time as Manchester United manager, because even if he doesn't go this week, it's hard to see how he lasts more than another 2 weeks. Like, there is, I suppose, a scenario out there where when you look at their upcoming games, it's Spurs at the weekend, then Atalanta, then Man City. You know, maybe there's a world out there where they say, all right, throw Ole a few... get him run over by the few buses here, and we'll come out the other end of it with a new manager, and they can take on some quote unquote easier games. But there's also
the Steve Bruce tactic, you know.
Yeah, but there is also a world in which they just pull the trigger, because, you know, the reports today as well are that the players are, you know, the reports are always so patronizing as well, because it's always, well, they like Ollie.
But they're concerned about his tactical nous and his ability to get performances out of the team.
And one thing that was interesting as well is that a lot of players are concerned with how he's been treating Mason Greenwood and Cristiano Ronaldo and their kind of relationship on pitch. And there's been growing concerns that they're not passing to each other, which is,
it's been evident since the first match, but I don't know if Ollie or any manager could really do much about that. It's a leaky faucet, like it's a leaky tap. There's info coming from everywhere and anywhere. There's routine sources that that have good sources within the dressing room, and you know which players are speaking. It's always the same suspects. The other side of it then, when you're talking about Conte and the fact that he let everybody know this morning he was available for this job, and even though he would not like to join a club mid-season, he will consider it for an opportunity like Manchester United, but he has to speak to the club and they have to want him, and they have to, you know, the project has to be right and all that nonsense that they spout. But that's a two-way operation as well. It's not coming out of nowhere that, you know, Conte's not going to put his name for it if he doesn't think that there is something imminent. And agents speak, and everyone, like the managers and the players, often share agents, and like this information isn't, it's not coming from nowhere, is what I'm trying to say. Like, I think, like we talked about this a few weeks ago and talked about how this was a crucial four game segment, I think it was, and this, we're only halfway through it. I think Atlanta, the repeat leg of Atlanta in Bergamo, and their match next week against, you said it a second ago, who's it, Spurs,
yeah,
like that's there, we consider those the crucial matches. But I suppose the way in which they lost this match was so appalling, given that they're winless in four in the Premier League, that they're now level on points with, among other teams, Arsenal, who had such a horrific start to the season, that they were talking about, will Arsenal be, down the bottom of the table, and now they're level on points with them. The season isn't gone. I think everything is very stuck in there, and all the teams are very close together. So, in theory, Solskjaer can recover from this and get his routine top four finish, but I suppose at this point in time, the investment that's been made, the fact that they have players the likes of Paul Pogba, who can't even start this, like the Merseyside derby, it's not the, what is it, the
Manchester,
the Manchester, you know, Manchester Liverpool derby, whatever you want to call it, it's bizarre, and that they play so defensively and yet play so badly. It looks naive. It looks, not to really criticize Solskjaer, but it looks almost like, this is the kit man's team, and they will get hammered and battered, as Gary Neville put it, by a good team, but they'll survive against the other teams and probably make their way to the Champions League. I suppose it's up for Joel Glazer and Richard Arnold and Ed Woodward and whoever else is in this decision-making echo chamber today to decide whether it's good enough to have a by-the-by manager getting by with the massive investment they've made into the club. Not that Glazer's made any investment into the club, but the massive investment Manchester United PLC or whatever their entity is called now have made in this team, and to just be getting by and, scraping into the top four, getting knocked out in the group stages again, possibly, although it looks unlikely at this stage, but it is still possible, and, that's probably not good enough. Bringing Conte in, I don't know if that's the solution either, but as we've discussed off air, the options aren't far and wide. Like, there's not that many managers out there.
Yeah, like, obviously it's always a bit more awkward when you have to make these changes mid-season. Like, I think if this was, petering out at the end of the season and it was obvious things were going wrong and it was time for change, but it was April, you could say, well, bring in Darren Fletcher.
Ryan Giggs.
Well, yeah. We can't really bring in Ryan Giggs.
No, I know, but remember, they brought Ryan Giggs in that time when Moyes was sacked.
But you'd be looking at Darren Fletcher or Michael Carrick to just continue things on.
Nicky Butt, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, although he did leave the club.
Paul McShane getting promoted to the that is what I want now. I want Paul McShane to be promoted to the first team manager. Just, caretaker, if you will. But, Paul McShane, what a guy.
Potentially.
Player manager.
That's what we'd be talking about. And then you could be saying, in the summer they can target basically whoever they wanted within reason. But with it being in October, Halloween time, it's very hard to kind of extract a manager out of a club that you might want, because obviously I suppose Mauricio Pochettino is the elephant in the room there that they've been linked with so often. Eric Ten Hag at Ajax is another one that I know some Man United fans would clamour for, and he is very highly rated and is doing a great job at Ajax. Graham Potter as well, you know, those type of managers. So, you know, you're looking at the moment at people who are just completely freely available, and Antonio Conte is the clear and obvious most high profile available one, especially with Zidane basically chucking his name out of the hat, if you're able to chuck your name out of a hat.
Who knows?
We'll have to ask Zidane. But Conte is the clear and obvious choice at the moment, if you will, because I look around and I don't really see anyone else who is available and mm-hmm. is, you know, has a good CV, can get something out of these players, can play exciting football. I know it's maybe not slightly... You're not going to get that heavy metal pressing of early days Jurgen Klopp or Brucey Dortmund, Jurgen Klopp, but I think you will still get good football under Antonio Conte. He isn't a Jose Mourinho Mark II. You know, I think he has a bit of a reputation as that, and I think that's not quite fair. I think some of the football his Inter Milan side played was fantastic, so well coached. Again, we're talking about players that knew where everyone on the pitch was going to be, where runs were needed to be made. You know, he's certainly a manager that can drill a defence, and, you know, in those big games he will go defensive if he needs to. But I think that's just because he's a smart tactician and he knows that winning games is what it's all about, and this is how you win those big games sometimes. But I do think against, you know, a Brighton or an Everton or a Newcastle, Man United, he could get Man United playing exciting football. So I don't think reservations over that should be too big of a concern. I think he is a rational short-term choice. Like, I think the problems that you could face with Conte is that, you know, his track record of who he brings in isn't always the best. His European record isn't the best either. He does fall out with players. He doesn't last very long. But, you know, I think if you were to do what PSG did when they brought in Pochettino, or what Chelsea did when they brought in Tuchel, and just give him a short-term contract, that wouldn't be a bad decision for Manchester United. I think it's kind of an open goal for them right now to do that, because, you know, he is a big step up from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Like, that's obvious.
Well, yeah, it definitely is. Like, my concerns are what you just said there, that he would be a short-term appointment. I wouldn't see him being there in 2 years' time, for instance. I see him...
I agree. But
is, we come back to this conversation we've had before, and it's the Chelsea model. Does it matter anymore in modern football? Does it matter that your manager only lasts a couple of years, that things go wrong and you have a dull period that you don't do anything in that season, you're right off that season, and then you go into a season transition, and then you hopefully win something the following year, and then the cycle all begins again? Is that it now? Is there no such thing as what Ferguson built, what say various Liverpool managers built in the 70s and 80s after Shankly, Wenger to an extent, or even what Klopp is trying to build now at Liverpool, and to an extent Pep Guardiola at City? It's two diametrically opposed philosophies of football in a different way to just, you know, lump it or pass it. It's do you believe in a long-term philosophy at a club or not? I don't think Conte is someone that does that. At Manchester United, I think, would want to have that kind of long-term philosophy. I think that's what they desire. But this would definitely be giving into the notion that this is the future, that they will no longer have or ever have a Ferguson-like appointment again.
I don't agree with that, though. Like, it is... You know, Liverpool, as you mentioned, of Jurgen Klopp, now Man City of Pep Guardiola, you know, they've had short-term managers in the past. It hasn't stopped them bringing in someone and building a club around them, essentially. You know, especially in Man City's case, that club was built around Pep Guardiola. And I'm sure if both left in the morning, particularly Pep Guardiola, they'd bring in a short-term replacement and build to that next big guy that they could build a team around, build a club around. Because, you know, this is cyclical. It's not forever. You know, this, it does come in waves. Manchester United obviously had the long-term manager in Sir Alex Ferguson. David Moyes didn't work out. That was supposed to be a long-term appointment, but Louis van Gaal was brought in on the proviso that at most he would give them only 3 seasons. He only ended up giving them 2. You know, sometimes when you hit a rock bottom, and I don't necessarily think this is a rock bottom because Man United could still have a good season, but when you hit an extreme low, sometimes you just need someone that can come in and, you know, fix things.
You need an Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Yeah, that's what you're saying. You need someone to come in for a short term.
Exactly. Like, that's what we said when he was appointed, is that he shouldn't be here in 5 years' time. And, you know, in many ways, we've said in the past that he'd hit his ceiling. So really, this whole problem comes from a lack of proactivity in that sense. And that's been the big, like, that, it's a damning indictment of Manchester United that they aren't proactive. They are reactive. And they let, you know, these extreme lows happen before any decision gets taken that they then evolve. You know, other clubs are smart. It's a sign of a good, well-run club that they could be a bit more proactive. And you know, we all have called out Manchester United for not being a well-run club, that they are actually just insulated by money. You know, we've seen that at other big clubs in the past as well. It's not exclusive to them. We've seen it even at Barcelona, where, you know, their insulation is looking a little thin at the minute. Real Madrid as well, you know, we've seen it with Arsenal in the past, that their money ran dry to an extent. Milan have had their problems. But with Man United, they're still at a point where they shouldn't fall that far again. They shouldn't be finishing as low as they did under David Moyes again. Because the squad is also just that good at the moment. Like, and I'm not saying the squad is amazing. It clearly still has a couple of holes in it. And that's been part of the reason why things have fallen apart. But it is a squad that an elite manager could get results with and could compete with. And, you know, at this point, Manchester United have spent enough money on this squad that they need to be competing. Because it's totally embarrassing otherwise. And Sunday was obviously very embarrassing.
Yeah, it pretty much was. You're reaching an impasse. That's the only thing I see. And you dance around the topic without really talking about it. But I think you're highlighting the problem with Manchester United, and it's something we've come back and forth with probably since the Super League announcement happened. That they are run by people who don't care. They don't make decisions in time. They seem to make, you know, popular decisions, and I don't mean that in the good sense. I mean it in the sense that, will this make people happy today because they were unhappy yesterday? That type of decision, a populist decision that's not really driven by any sense or any long-term planning or any knowledge of the game or any knowledge of how sports work in general, I think. And that's the main problem, I think, with Manchester United. And maybe they'll get it right with Conte in the short term, this appointment, and if this happens. And maybe it won't work out, and then we'll be back in the same position either way, I think, in 2.5-3 years. And the same people will be in charge, and the same owners will be there, and they'll probably make a bad mistake again, and it'll make the vast swathes of Manchester United fans around the world even more angry. It's just kind of a... It's like a cycle. It's just never ending, I think. And I think there's a danger for that continuing unless you get some kind of strong figure in there that's going to shake things up and that's going to set out a stall. And I don't necessarily mean a manager in that regard. I mean, like, Richard Arnold's coming in now as the new chief executive, replacing Ed Woodward. Is he the guy to do it? I don't know. I don't think he is. And that, you know... Yeah, they. I know they've been trying to shake up their institutions this year. You know, getting data analysis more into things, getting, you know, more technical directors involved and people who know the game and kind of modernizing the club in ways that you would have thought that a club the size of Manchester United would already be. So that, I suppose that's moving in the right direction. But I still think they make crucial decisions incorrectly. They chase transfers for the sake of chasing likes and chasing engagement, and, you know, if that's the first thing they mention at their annual general meetings every year, that's kind of a sign to what their actual focus is on.
Yeah, like, when you look at Manchester United, you see a club that's run by people who don't really get football.
They don't get sports.
That's the big problem. Like, they have, I know they've recently appointed Darren Fletcher, who, you know, obviously was a pretty decent footballer in his own right, but what about Darren Fletcher actually says that he understands the modern game? You know, there's not a whole lot. Obviously, we can't even judge him even now because he's not been in the job long enough. Nicky Butt was doing a good job, but, you know, he seemingly felt forced out of the whole underage. Like, he ran basically United's youth academy. And right now, their youth academy is in a really good place. you know, why wasn't he, you know, brought in to delegate some further roles in the main squad? If he could do it at underage level, maybe he could get something going.
Yeah.
In the main squad. So, you know, Ed Woodward, we've called him out in the past, doesn't get football, doesn't get sport. You know, Richard Arnold has been talked about a lot recently. What with him coming in as the new CEO, whenever, it could be April, it sounds like Ed Woodward says he wants to stay till April, according to ESPN.
He'll never leave.
Yeah, potentially he'll just say, oh, well, I've resigned and I'm leaving, you know, 2 weeks got pushed back, whatever.
I'm becoming chairman instead of chief executive or something like that.
Yeah, some random title change. But Richard Arnold, I saw him being discussed in regards to the recent Premier League meetings around the Newcastle ownership and the various different emergency meetings that have been called in, and Richard Arnold is attending these and actually speaking instead of Ed Woodward, I presume, because no one wants to hear from Ed Woodward among the Premier League clubs anymore. They're sick of him, what with his backstabbing and all the Super League hijinks, and everyone is saying that, you know, his commercial intelligence is amazing and that he really gets how to sell things, but that's not, you know, that's not a transferable skill to football at all. You know, he could be good at maybe bringing in extra revenue here and there, and that's what we've praised about Ed Woodward in the past as well. But, you know, it's all the same problem. Someone who, you know, gets business, but business isn't sport. It can't be run in the exact same way. Those skills just aren't transferable. And, you know, maybe he will understand and admit that. He'll have the self-awareness to change that. But, you know, just at the same time, he could be a bit like Ed Woodward, who absolutely had no self-awareness, decided he actually quite enjoyed the transfer signing lark or whatever that cliche goes for managers. You know, he really enjoyed the thrill of bringing in a new player, even though he wasn't actually all that good at it. And so he retained all that power. So, you know, it could go either way. Richard Arnold remains to be seen, but they desperately need someone who can be intelligent enough in how they review themselves and say, look, I'm not up to the task of this. I need to delegate, because, you know, the best managers do know how to delegate when they're incapable of doing something. Or they're not the best at doing
Ferguson
something.
Ferguson proved that. Yeah, Ferguson delegated to his coaches. Last 20 years of his career, Brian Cage, Steve McLaren, Carlos Queiroz, you know, Mike Phelan even. Like, every one of those were given enormous amounts of power that they wouldn't have in another club, because Ferguson recognised where his failings were and where their strengths lay. And that's why he empowered them to try new things, to do new coaching techniques, to try new tactics. And it's something that's absent from the rest of the Manchester United organisation. Like, you're talking about that delegation, that power to delegate. Like, not every club, but most of the top Premier League clubs are pretty good executives, like, on the business side of things, on the marketing side of things. They're pretty strong. Liverpool have been the one of the main ones in recent years. Chelsea have been, you know, they took some Manchester United staff back in the day. But, you know, on their executive side are phenomenal at their job. Arsenal, something similar as well. Spurs as well, you know. But the problem they all had at one point or another was, okay, now we have to actually get the footballing side of things right, because that powers the commercial aspect of it. That powers the business side of it. And you're right, like, Liverpool have a huge team at executive level that have been delegated to, you know, be in charge of the youth academy, like you say, be in charge of footballing matters in general, be in charge of the technical, the exploration of data and scouting and all that sort of stuff. Like, Liverpool have made a huge thing about it. Leicester, when they won the league, it was made a huge deal about it. Everton recent times have invested massively in it as well to try and catch up with these other teams. And Manchester United are distinctly absent from that whole conversation. And until the time is when they're actually come up to speed and catch up with the modern times, they're going to be left behind. And there's only so much throwing money at a problem will resolve. You need smarts as well.
Yeah, because, like, really, obviously, this still goes back to the fact that they've never really recovered from Ferguson leaving in 2013. And I suppose when he left, and laterally when Wenger left Arsenal, there was kind of a eulogization of, this is it for the club built around one man archetype, that, you know, Ferguson was the director of football, he was the head scout, he was running the academy, he was running the team, and obviously, as we say, he delegated a lot, you know, in terms of management of building the team, but he was the face of the club. Whereas at Liverpool now, you know, who have completely overtaken Manchester United, who are one of the best run clubs in Europe, are one of the best sides in Europe. They're the model that, that teams really need to be looking for. You know, Jurgen Klopp is the manager, but he's not the chief scout. They've got someone who handles that whole side. They've got someone who handles the data analytics, the fitness, everything.
Negotiations. Like
exactly.
There's lawyers, there's image rights people. Yeah.
Jurgen Klopp's concern is, you know, he runs training day-to-day, probably delegate some of that even to a few coaches that are his right-hand men. He's obviously in the dressing room giving out the match day tactics, and he's on the touchline every match. You know, that's the extent of his duties, and he does them excellently. He's one of the best coaches in the world, obviously. But that is how the model football club is run now. And the thing about all of that is none of it is a secret either. It's not like they've done this and no one knows how they've done it. A lot of it is very open that they, you know, that's how this club is run, and they are successful doing so, and they manage
the people
money.
Are on LinkedIn. Yeah, like there's staff like Michael Edwards, I believe, is leaving Liverpool. He's their technical director. He rolls up from, I think, the data side of things at Portsmouth. You know, these people are available to hire for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
They didn't just, you know, they weren't cultivated by Liverpool. Liverpool paid top dollar for them and utilize them properly and listen to them, but they have been available, and I was talking about this to you for a while. Like there's always talk of a technical director going here or a scouting going here. There's little talks about, you know, changes of staff in these places. Manchester United have seemed very static, with the exception of David Moyes when he came in and his kind of mass sacking of old Ferguson appointees to replace them with his own. I haven't heard of a huge amount of staff overturn in that side of things at Manchester United. And maybe it's time for that, and maybe it's time for a freshening up of how they do things, if not the staff people, the actual methods and the processes they're using.
Yeah, exactly. Like we heard, I think, over the summer that they'd signed a set-piece coach from a highly rated one from Chelsea. They've not been great on set-pieces, which is concerning this season. Obviously, Darren Fletcher, you know, that was about 12 months ago now, I think. Then this month they hired basically a chief of data analytics and statistics, you know, about 10 years later than anyone else, which is a sign of how far behind the times they are. So, you know, it's been so slow. Like, they advertised that position a year ago and they only filled it now. They, you know, they need a team to work with that guy. They can't just have that guy doing it all by himself. They need to then, when they actually build that team, listen to them. Because, like, we've heard of other clubs bringing in these kind of stats guys who are very highly rated, who use these, you know, expensive systems that they've R&D'd to fine-tune them to be completely amazing. And then they just don't listen to them. Like, that was a big problem with Barcelona. They have the innovative hub or whatever, which is meant to be, like, you know, a ton of money went into it. It's about to be really highly rated. But the board and the management team never listened to them. And that's part of the reason why they are in the mess they are right now. So, you know, that is another thing as well. Is they need to listen. They can't just say, I know what I'm doing. No one can tell me anything. Because, you know, that's obviously it's huge, hugely arrogant. But it's also just how you end up in a mess like Barcelona did.
Yeah, and Barcelona are the and Juventus to a certain extent, and Manchester United in England, they've fallen into this kind of politicky way of doing things. I know this person, therefore I will get this person's player. I will make friends with this agent. I will make friends with this club. I will buy this player for a lot of money, and that way I'll buy the next player for less money. Like it's agency, it's a way of doing business, but I think it's been proven that it's not a sustainable way. Barcelona proved that, certainly. And yeah, it's really what Manchester United have set their stall out in doing. And yeah, unless there is change from those new appointees like Darren Fletcher, like you said, and like the new data chief and the various other people that they've tried to appoint in recent times, and indeed Richard Arnold, I would be, as I said earlier in this, I'd be concerned about the long-term sustainability of Manchester United and the way they do things. Because it's, you know, Liverpool, when they lost Kenny Dalglish in 1991, you could argue that, well, they won the Champions League in 2005, 15 years it took them to really get him back on top. And even then, it took them another 15 years after that to go and win the league title and to really get back up to where they are now. do you think Manchester United are going to take the full 30 years before they're back? And really, and unless they make changes soon, I think they could be locked into that long term. They're just far too far behind.
Yeah, because the whole thing does just seem totally stagnant. And you're right when you said earlier that it'll just be the same thing in 2 or 3 years when, for example, Antonio Conte leaves. You know, I don't see him, you know, in reality, what should probably happen is they give him an 18-month contract and then give him very little say on the direction of the squad. And then Antonio Conte probably leaves because he wants that direction of the squad after 18 months. So you're looking at the end of the 22-23 season. You know, they should be looking to hire another guy, but they should already be drawing up the list of names who they should be looking to bring in, unless Antonio Conte ends up being just a runaway success and all his ideas perfectly align with the direction the club wants to go in. I just don't see that happening because of the character that Antonio Conte is. You know, he just isn't that guy. But he is successful. He does win trophies. He does play good football, generally speaking. He plays a modern way of football at the very least. He can train and train these players and make them look like they're actually coached week to week, which for the last however many years, Manchester United just really haven't looked like they have been. So, you know, they should already be looking ahead to, okay, we build short term. We have a couple of, you know, pretty agreeable transfer targets for the next summer. A midfielder probably, sell a couple of players, keep the young players that he probably won't play, like Sancho. I don't know, will Sancho play much? I don't think Marcus Rashford or Mason Green will get as many minutes as they might have under Solskjaer. But, you know, say, okay, you don't want to play these guys, but we are keeping them because we do quite like them and they are quite young. Just like we wanted to keep Anthony Martial back when Mourinho wanted to get rid of him, you know, we stick to that philosophy. But we will bring in a midfielder because, my God, you need a midfielder or two. you know, so don't blow up the whole squad. Like, keep it generally as it is. Don't let Conte maybe mess around with it too much, just because that's how you end up with a squad that's built by six managers being managed by a seventh. So I think they should really just focus on, okay, Conte, this is your squad, do with it what you can. Here's 18 months, let's go then and get whoever, you know, it could be anyone in 18 months, really. Right now, the obvious name, I suppose, in Manchester United, because they've gone from so much in the past as Pochettino, but it could be literally anyone in 18 months. And that's how you build the club back up, because, you know, Conte will sell the ship. He will get top four. He probably should get them out of this Champions League group, though, his European record is oddly quite bad. So, like, I think that would be, it would be bad for Man United for all the reasons that we said, that they should be better than this given the money they spent. But at the moment, they just need that bit of stability before they can really do to modernize the club, because in that 18 months they should be doing everything that we've said in terms of building up the structures of the team, bringing in a data analysis team, bringing in executives that know football, that know how the modern club is run. And that's really the easiest way to get back on track, because the other option is to blow everything up.
Yeah, and I think that would be, but yeah, you know,
that would be a brave decision. I don't see
the it would, yeah, like just complete, you know, burn it all down and rebuild it again would be the bravest of all decisions, and it probably would help them in the longer run. But given the landscape that's out there, given the fact that they now will probably have to worry about Newcastle in 2 to 3 years' time, as well as the other, you know, members of the so-called top six, and plus Leicester, plus maybe Everton, you know, it's going to be a really tight league outside of real sugar daddy teams, I think. And yeah, I completely agree with you. I think Conte is the best possible manager they could get at this moment in time. He's not attached to anyone else. He's proven track record in England. He is a winner. He won Serie A last year. He left Inter of his own accord. It wasn't like he was sacked because of bad performances. He's still going strong. I think he's still in the peak of his managerial prowess. So I think he would be a good appointment for Manchester United. It's just, as you said, everything that's associated with it is the big concern. And whether this is the right decision, who knows?
Yeah, and I suppose it is the fact that there's no one really else available. Like, they, you know, there's an alternate reality out there where he's still Inter Milan coach, and then there's really no alternatives out there. And it's the fact that, you know, those managers that we cited that are still at clubs are all in exciting moments. You know, Erik ten Hag could go on a big Champions League run this year again, which would really be career defining. And I don't think he would give that up for anything at the moment, because he, you know, has been linked with other jobs and turned down for a contract extension at Ajax. And
Erik ten Hag could be at would be at Barcelona now if he had wanted to be. He would be Barcelona manager today and would have been appointed at any point in the last 6 months probably, but he wants to stay at Ajax. There is other exciting managers out there as well, but this goes back to what we said about the whole agency problem with Manchester United. Is they're not going to appoint them. They're not going to like do the research and find out about, oh, this is the new young and up-and-coming manager. They have the right ideas and they're working at like Mainz in Germany, or they're the type of work that that sort of Bayern Munich do, but certainly the likes of Borussia Dortmund definitely do. You know, they keep an eye on things and they watch developments in the game and they actually take a risk on them. Real Madrid have even done it in the past, but Manchester United are certainly not going to do it. So it is like a field of one at the moment. I can't see them picking anybody else that wouldn't be an extremely short-term appointment. I'll go on, bring in Steve Bruce for the crack or something. They're not going to make anybody else that kind of... They're not going to promote anybody from a lower team or a lower echelon of football. They have to have someone at the very top. And that leaves their field very short and narrow.
Yeah, like, I couldn't even see them doing something where they brought in, say, Laurent Blanc or Lucien Favre for 6 months. I don't see them like a respected manager.
They're not big enough name. Like, yeah.
Exactly, even though Laurent Blanc does have the cachet, I suppose, of being a former United player. I just don't see them doing something like that either. Especially because that was the circumstances in which Solskjaer came in originally. Like, we are looking for a caretaker for a caretaker, essentially, in that circumstance. Mm. In which case they should bring in Craig Shakespeare. But
he's doing a fine job at Aston Villa as assistant manager, and he's looking awful tanned these days.
Yeah, so, you know, that's a great argument in and of itself, really. Like, you know, Lucien Favre is someone that, like, for 6 months I think could do a decent job and probably get them top four, and then they could do something in the summer with someone else. But, yeah, I don't see the club doing that either. So, like, Conte is the big name in the paper. Is it, you know, for all we know, we might have to have this conversation again in 3 weeks because it only happens then. But for now, that's where I see things going.
Yeah, like, before yesterday, I would have thought that Solskjaer, no matter what, and especially because they got we didn't even speak about the comeback against Atlanta, where they were appalling. Now, it turns out they could get worse against Liverpool, but they were terrible in that first half at times, and they offered very little, and it was only really the ultimate pressure on them and Atlanta's propensity to fold that really led to United coming back into that. But it's going to be a long couple of weeks for Solskjaer, whether he gets sacked or not.
It's the history of the Tottenham. We believe in the history.
Let's look ahead now, I suppose, to the next week of football as well. I suppose the big game next week, it does actually involve Manchester United against Spurs. We should look at this, I suppose, from the fact that Spurs lost 1-0 to West Ham at the weekend. I suppose we might be another week, couple of weeks away from talking about who replaces Nuno the way things are going. This is a game where both sides are just hitting extreme lows. It could be a chance for one team to just batter the other.
Yeah, I honestly think it's hard to pick between the two of them in terms of how bad they can be. Like, obviously, I think Manchester United have a better set of players than Spurs, and Solskjaer seems to get them a better performance out of the players than Nuno's managed so far in his tenure. But yeah, we didn't even mention Arnhem Vitesse. Like, they really made Spurs look bad during the week, because they left themselves open so many times and Spurs couldn't do anything with it. West Ham it's usually a tough game against West Ham, and this was no different. And really, Spurs couldn't cope with the intensity, I don't think, of the occasion. And given that there is a history of Manchester United as well, that there is famously that they lose to Manchester United with a very few exceptions, including last season, the 6-1 last season, you know, that does kind of make things a bit spicier, because like a lot of these players were humiliated. Like I presume Anthony Martial was sent off. I presume he'll want revenge in this match. Mm. And a lot of those players will be fighting. And throw into that the fact that they could have a new manager. And yeah, like I think there could be a 1-2 punch coming in terms of managerial sackings. If Solskjaer goes, Conte comes in, Manchester United get a big win against Spurs, and Nuno's gone.
Yeah, like in many ways it could be a perfect first game for the likes of Antonio Conte to get a statement win against a big name that is, you know, in reality actually not doing all that well at the moment. It's a much better scenario than, say, they play this game, they lose this game, they lose to Atlanta, they lose to Man City, and then someone mm-hmm. comes in. You know, or having Man City even as a first game, that would be a terrifying prospect for any man that could step in. So, yeah, it's really hard to see how this game shakes out. I don't think either are playing midweek in the Carabao Cup, which is unusual for both. They've got a busy schedule usually, so a bit of a free week as well.
Time for Conte to bed in, you know?
Yeah, potentially. So yeah, it's Friday or Saturday evening game as well. So I'm looking forward to this one, because really at the end of it, you know, whoever loses, we win, I think, in terms of what we could talk about out of it. Earlier then on Saturday, there will be Leicester Arsenal. Leicester got a win against Brentford. Nice counter-attacking football got them the win there, and they seem to be kind of back to winning ways at the moment. They started the season kind of slowly, but maybe they're starting to kind of figure things out now that maybe some players are coming back as well and new ones are getting bedded in.
Yeah, like Dak has had a fairly good couple of like week or so, scoring all the goals he did and setting up. Was it James Maddison who scored the winner?
Yeah.
And that was James Maddison's first goal in a long time. I think there maybe it was 10, or it was at least, it was in double figures anyways, his first goal or first goal scoring creating chance that actually led directly to a goal that he's had in a long time. Youri Tielemans is still on top form. He's just taking shots and they're going in. And Iheanacho's, as I said, is playing better. It's defensively where their issues have been this season, I personally think. And they're slightly starting to sort those out there. I think they're playing a more controlled formation. He's keeping everything a lot tighter than he was before. And as you said, they're playing a counter-attacking team now, very much so, under Brendan Rodgers at Leicester City. So, yeah, like I would fancy Arsenal, given that they seem to be getting a style of football going. Again, it's something that's a high press, but teamed with a bit of a counter-attacking style similar to what Manchester City tried to do. We'll see whether it's for the long term, because Arsenal seem to have a habit now of winning and then losing or drawing or just disappointing in the following match. So on that basis, you'd have to say a Leicester win is inevitable, but there's a history in this, and I'm sure after last season, where I think Leicester did Arsenal pretty badly, they'll be the sought after revenge as well.
Yeah, Leicester and Arsenal games in the past have usually been quite good. Mm. There was the 5-2 of the year, Leicester won the lead, and the reverse game at the Emirates. They had a couple of exciting games in the last couple of years as well, between Arteta and Rodgers and Emery as well. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this one, and hopefully it can live up to past expectations as well. No other huge games coming up this weekend. There were a few huge games in Europe this week, though. El Clasico and the Derby d'Italia as well were highly contested matches. Real Madrid came out on top against Barcelona. Is that just a sign of where both teams are at the moment, that Real Madrid got the lucky bounces?
It was a poor match, to be fair. Like David Alba, like breaking forward and scoring a goal is quite funny. And then the last two goals were both in stoppage time, so they kind of didn't matter. Barcelona offered very little in that match. Real Madrid didn't offer much more. They both looked tired teams. They seemed to cancel each other out, and both teams were fairly happy with the situation that they were in. Barcelona coming into it not expecting to get anything out of it, and they didn't. They didn't get a good crowd there either for a Clásico, which is quite poor when you think about it. It's not looking good for Barcelona this season. I think they are regressing back to a point where I don't even know if they're Champions League contenders, to be honest.
Yeah, interestingly, it does leave them in ninth in La Liga. They do have a game in hand on some of those teams. I don't get why there's so many random teams on 10 and random teams on 9. But that game in hand is also against Sevilla, who are third in the league at the moment. They're doing quite well under Lopetegui. So, you know, not exactly a given that they'll win that either. You'd rather the points on the board. And right now they're 3 points behind Atletico, who they don't have a game in hand. Actually, they don't have a game in hand that they could catch up reasonably with anyone in the top four. So, yeah, they should consider themselves not a Champions League team right now. And they might not even get out of the Champions League group either. They did win midweek, but they are in a spot of bother there with Benfica and Bayern Munich.
Yeah, I find it difficult to believe that they'll get out, to be honest. They're going to probably win their return game against Dinamo, because Dinamo really didn't offer anything at the Nou Camp, and their Barcelona were there for the taking. They put out, not a reserve side, but they rested a few of their important attacking players, and Barcelona still looked dominant and could have scored a lot more goals than they ended up doing. They kind of just settled on it because they were saving themselves, I think, for the Clásico. But yeah, I think the Europa League beckons for them.
Yeah, which is, you know, crazy when you think about it, because when was the last time they were in the UEFA Cup? They probably have never played in the Europa League. So it's been, I think I saw 17 years was thrown around lately as the last time they were in the, they were not in the Champions League going into Christmas.
I think they might have played Liverpool that season. That's how it's going back a long time. You're going back to Edgar Davids playing with them, the right when I think Louis van Gaal came back, and it was right before Rijkaard was appointed, probably around the point of Laporta's first tenure as president. Like, it's a long time ago.
And then in Italy, it was the big winners of the Derby d'Italia wasn't on the pitch. I think it was Milan were the big winners of that, with Inter and Juve drawing with a late equalizer. Napoli as well, I suppose, big winners. They lost their 100% record with a draw this weekend, but they're both 7 points clear now of Inter and 10 points clear of Juve.
Yeah, this game I think was a bit better, and I think Italian football is looking a bit better than Spain at the moment. It's exciting times in Italy. Like, it's wide open. Napoli are clearly dominating the league at the moment with their phenomenal start, but I don't trust Napoli to last season. I don't know, it's just something in my water about that. I don't think they'll do it, but yeah, like, it's exciting that Milan are you know, still punching above their weight, I think, given the squad that they have and the reliance they have on certain players, both young and old, in that team. They're doing phenomenally well, and Juventus still, I'm not sure about them as a club, really. I'm not sure what their plan is in the long term. I think this season is very much a transition season. They'll take whatever they get this year, and I don't think there's an expectation that they'll win the league, so it's anyone there for the taking.
Yeah, and I think really the fear for Juve as well is that, you know, given how competitive it is at the top of Serie A, they need to still maintain decent form if they want to get Champions League. They can't really afford to take the foot off the gas. And obviously, a draw at Inter Milan isn't the worst result, but they do find themselves sixth at the moment behind Atalanta, Roma, Inter, AC Milan, and Napoli. So, like, they're all decent sides. You're not looking at them going, well, that team's punching way above their weight. And then, you know, they do have decent teams breathing down their neck as well, and Fiorentino and Maurizio Sarri's Napoli, or sorry, Lazio. So used to saying Napoli after Maurizio Sarri. But Lazio as well, like, you know, we've seen how good they've been in the past as well, and Sarri is a pretty good manager.
We want to mention a little dictator and Lazio this week?
Yeah, some interesting stories going around Lazio, but on the pitch, I suppose, they're still doing all right, and Sarri has been very outspoken against some of the things going on there as well, which is quite interesting, and there's a dichotomy going on there as well. When you said dictator, I thought we were going to head to the other side of Rome and talk about Jose Mourinho and their 6-1 loss midweek to Bomo Glimt in the Europa Conference League, maybe. The most embarrassing result of his, well, I suppose, you know, he's had a few to choose from, Jose Mourinho, but that was a pretty bad one.
And saying that his team wasn't good enough, considering the expenditure they had and given some of the performances they've given this season, it seems very bizarre that he would ever say that. It's classic Mourinho, and we said this when he was at Spurs, that he's accelerating things at Spurs, and maybe he's accelerating it at Roma. I thought he was getting a bit of extra time, given the way and the style of football in Italy was a bit more suiting to his style at this point in his career. But he seems to try and be doing outdoing himself already and looking to get that sacking and hopefully probably get the Portugal job for the World Cup.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll keep an eye on how that one plays out as well. But I suppose that's it from us now this week. So until then, thank you for being here, Andrew.
Thank you for having me, Declan.
And we'll be back again to discuss Man United, no doubt, next week. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, then don't forget you can tell family and friends about the show. Spread the word of the Total Football Takeover. This show can also be found on podcast services including Spotify by searching Total Football Podcast. You can also subscribe to my own Medium page in the show notes. You can follow Andrew on Twitter at Conbon27, C-O-N-B-O-N, and myself at Cheesy Heartpun, C-H-E-E-S-Y-H-I-R-T-E-P-U-N. Most of all, thank you for listening, and we hope to be in your download feed next week too. The more the merrier. That's what we always say.